Today's episode is brought to you by Learn Academy, an award-winning coding bootcamp that is redefining coding education and helping make the tech community a more welcoming and diverse space. A local family business, Learn Academy is San Diego's original coding bootcamp. They've been serving our local community for over 6 years and have helped hundreds go from zero to the Manny Machado of the software development world in just 4 months. And we all know who we're talking about when we mention zero. Learn Academy has scholarships and flexible financing options that help make this a reality. If you or someone you know is looking for a new career path, call 619-940-7848. That's 619-940-7848. Or just go to www.learnacademy.org. Do it!
Hello, and thanks for listening to the Kept Faith Podcast. I'm Nick McCann. I'm joined by East County's Travis Russell.
Hey, go, go, Joe.
Go, go, Joe.
Unbelievable. I can't believe it happened, Nick. I honestly didn't think I'd be alive to see it. And the fact that it happened and that it was East County's own Joe, I'm still in shock almost a week later.
Yeah. Well, we're also joined by the host of the Padres Canon, somebody who dropped an emergency pod because of old Joe, Dallas McLaughlin, brought it home on Saturday night, had a few pops, laid it down. I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
Thank you, Nick. yeah, thank you. I was emotional. I got emotional. I mean, you know, as I mentioned on the Canon, if you didn't listen, I think we were all texting each other. Like, I don't think my phone has died that quickly in a long time. It was crazy just hearing from people I haven't heard from in years, who remember that I was a Padres fan. It was a nice moment. And, when it happened, I mean, like, I got teared up, you know. It was just, it's crazy. It's crazy.
It was really a removal of just a nagging thorn in our side. It was like, okay, we don't have to do this anymore. Every time somebody has a decent start, it's not going to be the same anxiety, I think. I hope. But
I think like you touched on it a little bit in the beginning, and I talked about it a ton on the Canon episode, but like, you know, like we mentioned it in passing that it's East County's own, you know, that it's San Diego's own. It's like, it's almost just a passing comment for most people, but I'm like, how do you even square that? Like, how do you square that mentally? Like, I just don't, it's to me the most amazing thing about it. Not that it's San Diego, not even that it's Padres' first no-hitter. The most amazing thing to me about it is that it's a kid who grew up loving Jake Peavy, loving the San Diego Padres, getting traded here this year, and then pitching the team's first no-hitter. Like, that all to me is just, it doesn't even compute. It is like somebody wrote it in a movie and we're living in a movie.
Yeah, and it even gets crazier and crazier. And I've tried not to like pull the, well, I know, you know, this guy and this guy kind of card, but Bobby Cressy tweeted something about giving Mount Helix, you know, the park to Joe Musgrove, where he can sit on his throne and lord over East County. And what's even more amazing about it is like, he grew up on Mount Helix, like his sisters did shows up there and his parents ran the park. Literally, they were the managers of Mount Helix Park. Yeah. And he would run around that park as a kid. And just the deep core foundation of San Diego and Joe Musgrove, it's so special. It's like, I can't, a week later, I still don't believe it's real. And I'm going to get emotional again. It's so cool. I don't know if any other like city I haven't done the research yet, but it has a story like that where a kid grew up loving a team, and it's just unbelievable. It's so unbelievable to me that, you know, we texted his parents because we know Joe's parents and we know Joe a little bit, and his mom tweeted back to my mom, "This is for my grandfather." You know what I mean? Dusty. Like, it's such a close knit, amazing thing that, yeah, Dallas, like you were saying, it's hard to wrap your brain around the reality and the facts of what really happened.
Well, and I'm betting it happened I'm betting this kind of thing happened in the early days of baseball, when like you literally played for the team in your city because you couldn't go to any other city. You know what I mean? It's like that was your choice.
He was the best at throwing hay.
Yeah. Yeah.
The pre-agent era, as you will.
Yeah.
So I mean, like it's this kind of a thing like takes you back to that feeling.
Right.
Like, it takes you back to that. This is the Padres. This is my hometown team, you know?
Yeah, I just have this. I actually watched it at Bobby Cressy's house. I was watching the first few innings, not to name drop, but I watched the first few innings, and then I left back to my house because we live pretty close to each other. And then I was tracking the game, and I realized, you know, and I was listening to the game on the radio, and Jesse was talking about it, like he was just saying it, you know,
Jesse Agler, yeah.
Yeah. So I texted Bobby and just went right back to his house, and we watched like the eighth and ninth inning. And it was just, it's so amazing. Like, you know, I just feel this, it to me, this whole season, this team, it just feels like San Diego's shedding its skin in a way. Like we had this old decrepit,
so true,
just form that we had that was, you know, we're angsty about the Chargers leaving. We have this pandemic happening, and it feels like we're emerging out of something. The stadium's has come down. It's like the turning of the page. It's a new chapter. We're just and Joe Musgrove's performance, which has been great all season, is just, it's just a part of that. It's like this kid just said, we're not going to be that anymore. We're not going to have this inside us anymore. I don't know. Maybe I'm just taking it way too deep, but I'm just like, I feel like a sense of renewal in the city and this community. And it's like, you know, just to have a local kid do that and know the history and know what he was doing with every pitch and to be able to actually block that out and perform like that, it's something I'll never forget. We'll never forget. We'll never stop talking about it. I mean, every day, every year when that day comes up, it's going to be a huge deal.
Well, it is, you know, like, I mean, it is, and I mentioned this in the canon, like, too, you know, but it's like, so I apologize the double dip here on podcast, but like, you know, you, Travis, you mentioned like, you know, contacting his family a little bit. And like, I just can't even imagine like your dad or your mom and you're like, my son just did something that no other San Diego professional sportsman has ever done in the history of San Diego sports. Like that doesn't even make sense, man.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane. It's just so cool. And you're right, Nick, like this last season was kind of the first time I started to feel it. And it's even just gotten like stronger and stronger where I literally feel like the Padres are just a different organization. Like it just feels, and I know the uniform change helps that, but like the spending helps that. The fact that it's not just going out and getting players like Kemp and Upton and that kind of thing. It's actually like strategically having a vision and a mission. And I still contend that whole Kemp thing was just to renew the farm system, but whatever, that's just me. But I mean,
it worked.
This time it's like, it literally there just seems to be this path forward where the Padres aren't going to be a laughingstock, at least for a while. You know what I mean? It's going to be a while. And it's just such an amazing feeling. And this is like, you know, last season was such a weird season and that was kind of like the going up the ramp a little bit. And this Musgrove no was like just shooting off the ramp. And like, we are now in on the next level, like we've made it there. And it's just so cool.
Yeah. And I think to piggyback on what you're saying, Dallas, I think it's also, you know, the feeling of being in lockstep with the organization. They are taking real risks. I mean, Fernando Tatis Jr., I love him more than probably any baseball player since Tony Gwynn, and you know, that contract is a real commitment and a risk, especially with the way he plays sometimes. Yeah. But, you know, it's like, you know, they're not this apprehensive organization who's like throwing out Sandy Alderson on the radio and saying, you know, tamping down expectations to spend more money and put real skin in the game. You remember that? I mean, he would just go on Darren Smith's show every week and say, okay, guys, calm down. We're not going to spend any money. Don't get too excited. You know, that whole thing is really scarred on me. And I just, this is a complete reversal. This is a completely different thing. And the fact that there's something about the fact that it's a thing like Joe Musgrove throwing a no-hitter happens. It also does validate what we've talked about on this podcast and our website for so many years, is that money buys happiness. Money actually does. In baseball, maybe that's not a good thing to believe in reality, in real life, but in this sliver of life, if you pay for a good baseball team, amazing things happen to your fans. And there's a direct correlation to that. And that's what I love, that they spent all the money and it's working out.
Yeah. I mean, that's Joe Chandler from TuxChrome.com. He was texting that, like, this is going to happen when you start to actually put good players on your team. Yeah. And it's true. You know, Matt Kemp, who got the Padres first cycle, like he wasn't the best when he was a Padre, but he was a good baseball player. Like, he's a good baseball player, and he did something good baseball players can do. You know, Musgrove is, you know, he's been very consistent and steady, and everybody last season was his breakout. Everybody knew this was going to be his big breakout this season. That was the consensus, and so far it has been. And that's just going to happen. Like, you know, when I texted you guys about Yu Darvish, like, I literally thought that night, I just had this weird feeling that Yu Darvish was going to get a no-hitter that night. And it was because Yu Darvish is on the freaking Padres. Like, that's why it felt that way. Because it's like, oh, wait, we have one of the greatest pitchers in baseball in the last 20 years. Like, there's a great chance that he'll just do it because he's Yu Darvish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's, you know, this is, I'm glad this happened at this point in the season. And, you know, we're heading into.
Well, sorry, Nick, to cut you off.
Oh, yeah, no, I know.
But it just couldn't have happened at a better time. We were all so down in the dumps about Tatis. Everybody was so bummed out. It could not have been a better thing to happen when it did.
Well, yeah. And I'm choosing to believe that it's healed Tatis, because it sounds like it's coming. It sounds like he's going to at least attempt to come back and see how it goes. And
I hope.
Yeah, when the lineup comes up in my little notification bar, I expect to see him in the lineup. That's what
I think it's important. And, you know, we have a series against the Dodgers, and it's something that we've been thinking about all offseason. And we think, you know, they are the class of the National League. They have been for most of this decade. And, you know, it's going to be an exciting weekend of baseball with the stakes as high as they've ever been, you know, it seems like in the last, you know, this, at least the recent past. So it's, you know,
I got to say, I'm really excited for the Friday night game with Weathers pitching, because I don't know. There were some rumors going around that the Dodgers kind of did a little icky shuffle to move their rotation around to line up their best, you know, three with the Padres this weekend. And the fact that we're just like, yeah, we're going to throw Weathers out there, he'll probably win. I just love the posture against, like, them prepping for us, and we're just going to throw, you know, Weathers out there, who I think will be amazing. But it's just, I don't know. It's a very interesting story tomorrow.
Well, I don't think Weathers is afraid. I think Weathers is down.
I mean, I don't either.
They're probably pull him after like three innings or something, but it's going to, you know, he's a killer, man. He's down, I think.
Yeah, he's like Ricky Powers as a kid, you know what I mean? Before he has to come back. I love watching him pitch. He comes out there, acts like he belongs, and doesn't give two rats asses what you think about him. He's going to throw it down your throat. And so tomorrow night's game is going to be fun.
Well, we're going to talk to a really special guest, Zach Cram from The Ringer. He's written a lot about the Padres and Dodgers this offseason and, you know, the early part of the season. We're going to check in with him. He's a staff writer for The Ringer, and he has a podcast on The Ringer baseball feed on Spotify. Let's check in with let's talk to Zach Cram.
Today's episode is brought to you by Learn Academy. If you don't know who Learn Academy is, they're helping everyone, including you, yes, you, the listener, learn how to code and help them discover a new and innovative career path. You might be thinking, there's no way I can learn how to code. I'm a million years old. Well, that's where you're wrong. Learn Academy has a weekend coding bootcamp that breaks down the basics in a way that everyone can understand. Yes, even you, the listener. You'll get 20 hours of virtual and engaging training from professionals. And by the end of the weekend, you'll have a website coded by you that you can show off to everyone on the internet. And that's what the internet is for, showing off. If you want to learn more, go to www.learnacademy.org or call 619-940-7848. Act fast, though, because for our Kept Faith listeners right now, you can save $200 at checkout with the code PADRES. Yes, you heard right, $200 at checkout with code PADRES. Do it right now.
All right, we're back with Zach Cram from The Ringer. Zach is a staff writer for The Ringer, and he podcasts on the Ringer baseball feed. What's up, Zach?
Happy to be here. Fun to talk about the Padres this time of year.
Yeah, yeah. I noticed before the season, you put together a couple pieces about our favorite baseball team. It's nice to know that that you're looking at us. So what was that process like? In later March, you dropped about, I think, three pieces on the Padres and Dodgers generally.
It's funny. I think probably around late January, February, around that range, the Ringer's baseball team had a meeting over Zoom where we all were told to come with some ideas, things we wanted to write about before the season. And at least 50% of that ensuing meeting was about the Padres and Dodgers, because the entire group of us, we were just so excited about this real rivalry that seems to be developing. It isn't just going to be a one-year thing. It'll be here for a while. And it kind of started last year, but last year was such a weird season. And then when they met in the playoffs, the Padres went into that series missing their top two starters. So it was a bit of a muted finish to that first season of the rivalry. But now that fans are back and they both spent the winter loading up, it really felt like the rivalry was here for real.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems as Padres fans in San Diego, Dodgers fans do a lot of work convincing us there's no rivalry. It's really fun to just live in a world where they spend so much time convincing us it's not real.
And to be fair, for a long time, it hasn't been. The Padres have not been relevant for a decade until last season. And now I think that is changing. One of those articles that you referenced, I basically compared the Dodgers and Padres of the 2020s to the Yankees and Red Sox of the early 2000s. And that is quite a bar to clear. The Yankees and Red Sox in 2003, 2004 played two of the most memorable playoff series of my lifetime. Obviously, the Yankees and Red Sox have much more history to the rivalry than the Dodgers and Padres do now. But that doesn't mean they can't start making their own history now.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just got to get one of the Boone kids involved. If we can get one of the Boones over.
There's so many of them. You've got to find a way to get one.
We might have one on our podcast right now. Come on out. Yeah.
Come on out. Dan Boone.
Well, yeah. So, this is going to drop basically on Friday, and game one of this series that the whole baseball world's really been looking forward to is going to start. It looks like we're going to have Ryan Weathers and Walker Buehler start in game one. I mean, you watched the series last year. What did you see from the Padres? You know, Ryan Weathers comes in and he has his first major league appearance in the playoffs. What do you think? What are you looking forward to this weekend mainly? That's my main question.
So, to be honest, that is not the pitching matchup I'm most excited about, given that we have, you know, Kershaw and Darvish coming up, and then I think Snell versus Bauer on Sunday, the two targets that the team's acquired this offseason. I think the interesting thing about Weathers is how he fits in with Mora Honhert, because the Padres right now have four men in their rotation. They're obviously waiting for Dinelson Lamet to return, and I think he's a huge X factor just because of how promising he was last season, but now it's fairly unclear given his injury. And really, since he was hurt all the way back in September, the Padres have been pretty cagey about exactly what his outlook is and how much they're hoping to rely on him this year. But if he is able to approximate last season's performance at all, that gives San Diego a really strong top four of the rotation. So I think Weathers is kind of a holding piece until Lamet returns. It's interesting to me. I'm curious, as guys who follow the Padres really closely, the most surprising thing to me about Weathers' presence in the rotation, both now and in the playoffs last year, isn't just Weathers himself, but the fact that he's not Mackenzie Gore, right? Because Mackenzie Gore is their top prospect, but when they needed a pitcher, they called on Weathers, who is a good pitcher, but he's not nearly as touted as Gore is. And we're waiting on Lamet's return from injury. We're also waiting on Mackenzie Gore, who, depending on who you ask, is the best pitching prospect in baseball.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ryan Weathers, like, his stock shot up when he made that appearance in the postseason last year. It like the shockwaves that we felt here in San Diego from that appearance. I mean, it was just unbelievable. It didn't make any sense really, because he only, I think what that was, three batters, if that, maybe two, for that first appearance in the postseason. And he was just lights out, and we all, everybody fell in love. I mean, we could have had a parade for him right then and there. That's how amazing it felt. And I think Gore is good, but they just, he hasn't had that kind of a FaceTime when it mattered with the organization like Weathers. And so I think they're willing to toss him out first to see how it goes, especially against the Dodgers high, you know, this is a high, high stress scenario. And he was in one last year, whereas Gore, I mean, he hasn't really faced a real test yet. I mean, that's my opinion. Who knows? I think we're all waiting on what happens with Gore. And usually that's a, for us Padres fans, we just assume it's a bad sign. His arm fell off at some point, and we're going to hear about that next week.
Yeah. I mean, there's, for Zach, there's really like the, there's the three starters at the top of the rotation. There's, you know, Snell, Darvish, and Musgrove. And then they have these two slots at the end, and it's really a four person group with Marajone, Lamet, Gore, and Weathers. And, you know, Marajone and Lamet are hurt, and it's really like a big topic amongst Padres fans to see who emerges from that foursome, really. I mean, I don't know. I'm curious to ask, like, you know, a big topic on Padres Twitter, some place where you should probably stay away from. I don't know. It's a dark and scary world, yes. But we'll introduce you to the right people. You pick the right horse. Don't worry about it. But covering teams, all the teams in baseball, do you find a spectrum in the way that teams release information about injuries? A big problem that a lot of people, Padres fans, have now is like when a Nelson Lamet goes down, we have this vague information doled out about whether or not he's getting an MRI or when he's getting an MRI. I mean, do you notice a difference between organizations in that way?
I think so. And there are organizations that are more notorious for that sort of thing. Mm. The Mets are one great example, where seemingly every Mets injury is, oh, he's fine, he'll be ready in three more days. And then 3 days later, it's, well, we're just sending him for an MRI to be cautious. And then a week later, it's, he's out for the season. And that's
Tommy John,
a pattern you see over and over again. I think, frankly, the pandemic has exacerbated these tensions, not just with Lamet, but especially with the prospects, because you don't even have scouts watching their games. They're not even playing games. Last year, basically all of the prospects were just playing internally amongst themselves. So it was really hard to get information. Nobody's seen Gore throw a pitch against real competition in 2 years at this point. Right. So I think come May, once the minor league season begins, then hopefully that information backlog will lessen a bit. But I think that's definitely a tension right now.
Yeah. You know, so game two of this series is going to, it looks like it's going to feature Clayton Kershaw. You wrote a piece around the same time about, you know, the changing of the guard of this generation of pitchers. You wrote about Clayton Kershaw, Max Scherzer, Verlander, and Greinke being like this top four of that generation. I mean, what are you seeing with like the changing of the guard, the new pitchers coming up that could take that spot?
Yeah, I think the impetus for that piece was that all four of those veteran pitchers are free agents after this season. Yeah. And that doesn't mean they'll all change teams. I, for one, would be shocked if Kershaw is not just a lifelong Dodger, given his career to this point. But I think it underscored how, like you said, we have a changing of the guard, where Kershaw, Scherzer, Verlander, or Greinke, all of those guys were basically in Cy Young contention every year for a decade. And that wasn't the case last year. Kershaw was the only one who received any Cy Young consideration. He was all the way down ballot. Now you have guys like Jacob deGrom, who is already in his 30s, but he feels like he's of a newer generation just because he came up so much later. And Shane Bieber, who's much younger, Trevor Bauer and Garrett Cole, who were teammates in college and now have signed record contracts, and they're younger than that foursome. So I think we're seeing that next generation arise. And even beyond that, like, it's kind of hard to define who is in a generation. You know, is Shane Bieber actually in the same generation as Jacob deGrom? They're pretty far apart in age, but they've both been winning Cy Youngs recently, and they're both newer to the scene. Walker Buehler, who's pitching on Friday in this series, is kind of that same class. And I think we're seeing this new wave of pitchers, which is good, because at some point, you know, Scherzer and Verlander aren't going to be able to pitch forever. We see Verlander's already out for the season with an injury. And I think it's good to have talent come up behind them and still give you stars to be excited about.
Yeah, I mean, the addition of Darvish and Snell obviously catapult, you know, this into a real rivalry, as people are saying, which is fine. I mean, we've been fine being the little stepbrother to the Giants Dodgers rivalry over this year. Like, going unnoticed has been great for us. But now that we're kind of in the forefront and the Giants are doing whatever they're doing, it's nice to have the spotlight on the Padres. But do you see, I mean, you know, this is kind of a question. I don't know if you watched the Pittsburgh series at all or saw anything, but obviously Snell was pulled in that first inning. Those kind of mistakes seem to be also in the spotlight. Do you consider them mistakes? I'm sure, covered Snell longer than we've ever, he had been on our radar. What are your thoughts on Tingler's mistake there? Do you consider it a mistake?
Well, I think the question with Snell that was really interesting with his leaving Tampa Bay is how he would fare away from the Rays organization, where the Rays have very strict philosophies, as we all saw in the World Series, about how long they're going to let starters go, and how will Snell fare in a rotation where he might be asked to pitch three times through the order every game. And he hasn't quite lasted that far in any of his games so far, but I think that'll be something to monitor as the season progresses. Another uncertainty right now, not just with the Padres, but league-wide, is how teams will manage just the sheer number of innings they need to collect from pitchers who probably only threw 60 or 70 innings last year and might be asked to stretch to 180, 200. And do you want to kind of limit them the first couple times through the rotation to be able to keep them fresh for 3, 4, 5 months from now? Remember, the Padres are hoping for not just September, but October at this point. And that's a whole extra month they need to keep their pitchers fresh. But to the point about trading for Snell and Darvish in general, yeah, I thought those were great moves, in part because they didn't surrender any of their top prospects besides Luis Patino. And Snell is kind of a like for like replacement for him. It's not like they gave up any of their other top arms or CJ Abrams or any of their other top prospects. And moreover, I commend them for trying. I think the Dodgers are such a juggernaut. The Padres and basically every other team in the National League West could say, well, let's just wait it out because we're not going to be able to catch the Dodgers at this point. But like, the Dodgers are such a machine and they have so much money and they're so good at player development that when are they going to stop being a juggernaut? It's right. Not like you can say, okay, well, 3 years from now, we'll be able to catch them, because the Dodgers will probably be a 100-win team 3 years from now too. So I commend the Padres for actually making a legitimate run at them. And I'm curious, like, would the Dodgers have gone after Trevor Bauer if the Padres hadn't made those trades? I'm not sure. The Padres certainly put some pressure on them and it might not work out. I think the Dodgers are showing already this year that they could legitimately challenge the single season wins record. And it's hard for any team to catch that, let alone one that's already seen its best player miss time with injury. But I think in general, like, even if Snell has had a couple bad starts through the rotation thus far, like, he's certainly an upgrade on the guy they would have had behind him.
Yeah. Well, you know, Trevor Bauer is a central figure in all of this, it seems like. He pretty much every baseball conversation now, but he's starting on Sunday, it looks like, against probably Snell, I imagine. But he's come under some, you know, there's always a story with him, it seems like, but we have heard from, you know, Ken Rosenthal that he is under investigation about substances putting on the ball. But, you know, what do you think about that controversy that seems to be brewing, or that whole conversation that's happening about spin rate and whether or not, you know, him becoming a dominant pitcher over the last year and a half has anything to do with that?
Well, so there are certainly suspicious spikes in his spin rate. The first few seasons of his career, he was around 2200 or 2300 RPM on average on his fastball, which is near the bottom of the league. And then all of a sudden last year, he shot up to the high 2700s, which is where he is again this season too. That's an increase of 500 RPM that brought him to the top of the league. And he had said before, you know, pretty explicitly, he had said the only way to increase your spin rate is to meddle with sticky stuff. So there's not much of a mystery if you've been following Bauer's statements and then his actual spin rates over the years. I think the question is how much MLB actually wants to police this, because technically it's been against the rules for a while, but it's just never enforced unless you're Michael Pineda and the pine tar you're using is actually visible on your neck during your start. It's kind of like a make it hard for us to catch you and then we won't really try sort of dynamic. But then they put out this warning to teams last year and that wasn't really followed, probably because of the pandemic. And then they put out the warning again this spring. And yes, we saw the Ken Rosenthal report about Bauer getting flagged, but I kind of think until he's actually punished or until anyone is actually punished for this, I'll believe it when I see it, just because MLB has been saying this for a while, but not actually putting their bite where their bark is.
Do you think that, I mean, we hear a lot about Bauer, and every time I hear more from him or about him, I just tend to like him less and less. I think he enjoys that kind of, you know, controversy, though, around him, surrounding him at all times. But do you think he's, because he was such a loud voice so far, especially this offseason, that maybe, you know, put a bullseye on him with baseball to look at what's going on and maybe what's causing his success?
He kind of dared MLB to do something by coming out and saying, this is the only way to increase your spin rate, and then increasing his spin rate. You don't need like an elaborate cork board to connect those dots, right?
Sure.
So I think he spoke out so much that he might end up being hoisted by his own petard if he does indeed get punished in some way. I think the fact that he initially brought it up to complain about what other pitchers were doing, like, this isn't really a fair comparison, but it does kind of remind me of what happened with steroids in the 90s when a couple guys were using steroids and then other players said, well, hey, I want to hit home runs too. And then they started using it, and then it kind of became a chemical arms race. And the thing that Bauer has rightly pointed out is that a lot of pitchers are using this stuff. Talk to any retired pitcher and they say, yeah, as soon as you get into the majors, people are offering you sticky stuff, a variety of substances. So if everyone is indeed using it and he's just kind of trying to even the playing field, I understand that a little more. But at the same time, it's not like 10, 20, 30 years ago when you just had like the one substance that got passed from player to player. Now with the advancement of technology and high-speed cameras and specific devoted laboratories, you can really drill down into the science of what makes the best sticky stuff. And that might be pushing the envelope a little bit too far, because now you can really get scientific and develop these concoctions that are better than any that came before.
Yeah. I guess he took that scene in Major League to heart.
Yeah.
Just a little too closely.
A little Crisco, a little Barbazole.
Vagisil, yeah.
Vagisil.
So basically, if the Dodgers win on Sunday, then they cheated, right? That's what
I mean. This is a Sunday night baseball game, right? Like, I think, oh no, it's not Sunday night baseball this weekend.
That was too easy for MLB to figure out.
But yeah. But that was when Pineda got caught. It was a big national TV game. So I could definitely see, like, I imagine Bauer will be pitching national TV at some point this season. And the announcers will surely focus on it at some point, especially if they see him digging around somewhere. His fingers don't belong.
Well, and if I was on the Padres bench, I would be chirping the whole game regardless. Hey, look at that. What's, you know what I mean? I would be nonstop making that an issue if I was a Padres player.
Well, so, and that's the kind of catch 22 is, if it's true that it's so widespread that everyone is doing it, you know, I'm not accusing any specific player of using sicky stuff, but do you want to be the one on the bench saying, hey, go check out Bauer if your guy is using it too? Because then that becomes a worry you both lose.
Right. I'll drop my drawers if you drop yours. You know, you can't be doing the same thing the other guy's doing and be accusing him of it. So yeah, it's a tricky thing.
I feel like Bauer is probably one of those pitchers too, who would just start messing with his neck and messing with his face just to be kind of a jerk about it. You know what I mean? Just be like, hey, look at me. And then make a really good YouTube video afterwards about it.
And the thing is, like, these kind of external factors, I think, really do matter for the sport. But in terms of the Dodgers-Padres rivalry, anything that can kind of amplify the excitement and the tension between the two teams, I think is a good thing as long as they're not like injuring each other in a fight. But we saw that in the playoffs last year with Machado and Brewster Graterol after the home run robbery. And I think there are a lot of excitable players on these two teams, from Tatis and Machado on one side to Joe Kelly, noted brawler, on the other. And I imagine with 19 matchups between the two teams and hopefully a playoff series after last year's playoff series, like, we're going to get some sort of fireworks this year. And I think, again, as long as nobody's getting hurt, that's a good thing, because that was true of the Yankees Red Sox as well. The fact that there's tension, just that it might break out into yelling or a brouhaha at some point, really amplifies the tension pitch to pitch.
Oh, it's the best kind of baseball. I love it.
Yeah. It's just nice to matter, Zach. That's all. It's
this is all new to us. We don't
they can fight all they want.
And like, they are in a tough situation. Comparing it to the Yankees and Red Sox, the big difference is that 15 years ago, when that rivalry was at its height, there was only one wild card per league. So yeah, if they were the two best teams in the league, they would just both advance the divisional series. But now, conceivably, the Padres could win 102 games, but if the Dodgers win 110, then congratulations, San Diego. This is the best season in franchise history. And now you have to beat Jacob DeGrom in a winner go home game. Yeah. And if anything, I think that makes the drama even higher, because the Padres are already a few games back of the Dodgers. And just heading into this weekend, if they lose 2 out of 3, if the Dodgers sweep, that's a really big hole. And if you're already facing down the wild card game in April, that's a really tough position to be in.
Zach, you're part of this generation of baseball writers coming up. What does Fernando Tatis Jr. mean to you? I mean, he might be coming back this weekend, and you know, he's an exciting, vibrant star that seems to play baseball in a way that is contrary to, you know, the old school ideals and everything. I mean, what does it mean to cover somebody like that in your position?
It's really exciting for a number of reasons, in part because he's just so good, and the dream of being able to watch his whole career is really exciting. I think like Mike Trout is really the first super duper star whose career I've been intently tracking from start to finish. And Tatis and Acuna and Soto are now all on that kind of next mini generation of superstars who start really young. And it's kind of amazing to be able to point at someone who's 20 or 21 years old and say, I'm going to be able to watch that guy's whole career, and he's probably going to be a Hall of Famer. And again, it's extraordinarily early. If Tatis keeps getting hurt, then maybe that won't be the case. But his pedigree thus far and his production at such a young age puts him on a Hall of Fame trajectory. So that's really exciting just in and of itself. And then also you see, like you say, players who are excited about flipping their bats and celebrating when they go around the bases. I still think about Tatis's celebration during that Cardinals series last year and the Game 2 comeback, and how excited he and Machado were going back to back, and being able to watch that every night because you have MLB TV and don't have to wait for the lone national game or the playoffs, and seeing how MLB is slowly starting to market these new personalities with obviously the Let the Kids Play campaign from a recent October, is exciting to see what the next decade might become of really celebrating these guys in all of their glory and not just, you know, quote unquote, playing the game the right way.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, like, you know, to stay on Tatis for one more minute, you know, obviously him getting hurt, and we don't know the severity completely yet of this injury. I think we'll find out this weekend what happens. You know, if he's out for the season, do you see a path forward for the Padres to still be contenders? I mean, Kim is a more than capable defender. His bat is starting to warm up a little bit, but he still has to adjust to major league pitching for an entire season. I'm just interested to see if you have an opinion on us moving forward, or is this just a wash and he should get surgery and we'll call it a season?
Well, I think if Tatis does end up being out for the season, they're definitely a pretty big step behind the Dodgers in my view, but I would still consider them a favorite for one of the wild card spots because the rest of the roster is just so strong. I mean, they're starting pitching and bullpen right now. Basically all of their best relievers haven't given up any runs. Their entire team ERA right now is 2.38, which is the best in the majors. And what the Padres did this offseason, which really kind of mimicked what the Dodgers have done is build up a lot of depth, even though it wasn't obvious where everyone would play every day, especially without the DH this season, you know, signing Kim and re-signing Profar, even though there weren't spots for them. And I think we've seen the value of that depth early on when Grisham was injured, but you had Profar to step in the outfield, and now Tatis is injured, but you have Kim, who, like you said, has not really hit yet, but he plays a good shortstop, and I think his bat is better than what he has demonstrated thus far. So they have that depth, so it's not like they're trotting out your average triple A guy. These are quality major league players. And beyond that, like, I don't know, if Eric Hosmer and Will Myers keep hitting like this, which they also did last season, the lineup is still really strong with those two and Grisham and Machado and Jake Cronenworth, who's kept up his hot start to his career. Yeah. So I think the lineup is still quite good. Obviously, the ceiling is a lot lower without Tatis, but this is still a team I would take against basically any National League club except the Dodgers.
Well, hey, nice. Hey, Zach.
This is so unfamiliar for us. I just have
so
to say.
So weird.
We started this podcast in 2008. And so we've had many lean years talking about. I just can't believe you're saying this about the Padres. That's all. Just I'm enjoying this.
I mean, that's long enough ago that was back in the old playoff days. You know, Jake Peavy was one of the most fun pitchers to watch, but it's been some lean times. I remember after they traded for Snell and Darvish, my piece about those two trades, which, right, they were in the same day, was going through all of the Padres opening day starters since Peavy left. And it's like, okay, well, this guy only lasted for a year and then he was gone. And then this other guy only lasted for a year when he was gone. And now they have like four legitimate contenders to take a ball in game one of a playoff series or on opening day. So that alone just shows how far they've come in such a short period of time.
Oh man, just thinking about Eric Lauer and Julie Chachin and
Clayton Richard had a wonderful opening day start. Yeah,
a couple, I believe.
Yeah. Couple, yeah, throughout the decade. Yeah,
yeah. Oh,
I was going to say, now our number three is capable of throwing a no-no. So there you go. That just shows you how far we've come in a short time.
Another example of depth, right? Like it wasn't just in the lineup. It was okay. We traded for Snell and Darvish. We have a good looking rotation, and now let's add Musgrove too. It's not like it'll cost us any of our top prospects. And now who knows? He looks like the best starter so far a couple times through.
He's so good. Zach, we'll get your thoughts on the Jed Jericho retirement next time. But thanks for coming on, Zach. It was really fun talking to you. We've been a fan of your writing for a long time. Check out Zach on Twitter at Zach Cram and his writings on The Ringer and his podcast, The Ringer Baseball Feed on Spotify. Thanks a lot again. Have fun this weekend, everybody. You know, let's watch the Padres win. You know,
thanks so much. This was a pleasure.
All right. Follow us at the Kept Faith and keptfaith.com, and we'll see you after all of whatever happens this weekend. We'll be okay.
Brawls.
Go Padres.
All right. Bye.